Hey guys, welcome back to the show. It's Castle Council time, and this week's Castle Council is brought to you by The Shave Union. The Shave Union delivers high-quality razor blades to your door when it suits you at a fraction of the cost of leading store brands. You can try them out for just $99, which includes a free handle, 4 6-blade cartridges with a trimmer blade. Go to shaveunion.co.za and try them today. If you haven't tried out Shave Union, I'll post up the link on the podcast. Go and click on it. Try Shave Union for $99, guys. You cannot go wrong. If you don't like it after that, you can cancel. You can just not bother with it any further. But let me tell you, once you've done that, you will not use any other blade. And the podcast is also brought to you by Jack Black Authentic and Original. It's pretty simple. We're guys, Jack Black guys. We're uncomplicated as well as uncompromising when it comes to our look. It's a look that speaks volumes about who we are. It's a look that says, if I can take time to care about myself, imagine what I can do for you. When it comes to grooming, we keep it uncomplicated and non-cosmetic. Why? Because we have nothing to hide. We're an open book, leather-bound with a wealth of knowledge and a timeless spirit that's ready for any adventure. The one thing we ask for in a grooming regime is that it's clean, comfortable, and simple. Jack Black Authentic and Original does all that for us. Jack Black fits seamlessly into our lifestyle, targeting everything from hair care, shave and grooming, skin care, as well as body care. It's a lifestyle that is as comfortable in the boardroom as it is vibrant on the vibrant urban street, on our way to a workout that keeps our bodies as fit as our minds. And when it's all said and done, Jack Black is there to gently soothe, rapidly refresh, and effectively repair. Let's build a culture of men who care for themselves as much as they care for others. Jack Black is the only men's brand with an eco-friendly pure science formulations. You can find Jack Black at Metropolitan Cosmetic Stores, either their online store or at any of their 4 stores in Sandon City, Hyde Park Corner, should I say, Melrose Arch, and Parkhurst. Jack Black Authentic and Original. Get yours today. And some good news coming up is that Jack Black will be available soon through the Shave Union portal as well. Not yet, but soon. So if you want to try a Jack Black, all you got to do is click on your Shave Union link and you'll be able to purchase some Jack Black from the Shave Union. I think that's in the next week or two. It'll be available to you. So keep an eye out for that as well. But in the meantime, visit that Metropolitan online cosmetic store or one of their 4 branches around Johannesburg. Also available to you guys for this week, we have a special giveaway. Yes, for the first time on Castle's Council, we're going to be giving away a Shave Union starter pack and 1 renewal. So 1 starter pack and a renewal for a man or woman. Or actually, let's do 1 for a man and 1 for a woman. I'm feeling generous today. I'm sure the Shave Union will back me on this. So we're going to give away 1 starter pack and 1 renewal to 1 lucky lady and 1 lucky man listening to the podcast. All you got to do for me, and now comes where you have to do a little bit of work for a little bit of reward, is send me a picture of you shaving. That's it. Just a picture of you shaving, please. No X-rated stuff. I'll save those in another folder. No, I'm joking. Just send us a picture of what you're doing. You're shaving either your legs, your face, your head, whatever it is you shave. Send us a picture of you shaving and tell us if you'd like the Shave Union starter pack and 1 renewal, and we'll get it to you. 1 lucky subscriber, 1 lucky listener, should I say, courtesy of theshaveunion.co.za. And with that, let's head on to the podcast. This week's podcast contains a very special guest. It's the first time we're having a return guest to the council. And it's Morne Lotta. He was previously on as the Inner Warrior. Came and spoke briefly just about Inner Warrior. It was hell of a interesting. And we've brought him back this week to discuss a little bit more about the Inner Warrior, but also a little bit more about the man, Morne Lotta, and what he does. And what his life's about and where he is and why he is where he is helping others. So with that, let's get on with the show. C-
Castle's Council.
All right, welcome back to Castle's Council. As I said, this week we have Morne Lotta. Now, Morne has been on the show before, but he came in before and we spoke mostly about Inner Warrior. And we will touch on Inner Warrior again because there were a lot of callbacks from people asking to us discuss Inner Warrior again. But first of all, welcome back to Castle's Council, Morne.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
But what I really want to talk about today, as much as I want to talk about Inner Warrior as well, and what's nice about today is we've got a little bit more time than we did last time. Last time when I was doing the podcast, I was limiting things, and I've decided to stretch it, and it's actually working quite nicely. So I'm hoping people will stick with us and while we go through this process. But yeah, today I want to talk a little bit about yourself, outside of Inner Warrior as well. You're a fighter, you're a coach, you're a personal life coach, as well as a fighting coach. You're a matchmaker for SFL. Yeah. So there's a whole lot of aspects to you that I want to touch on and talk about to find out a little bit about yourself. And in the process, hopefully, if there's anybody out there that maybe wants to or thinking about becoming what you do in any aspect of it, they can understand that it's not something that's... it's chosen. It's you. It's chosen for you.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important message. But let's talk about a little bit about yourself. By day, now Inner Warrior is a part of your life. It's an aspect of it. Yes. It's not a full time thing. Mm-hmm. So what is a full day? What is a day in the life of Morne Lotta? what is it about?
Well, it consists of many things. The first thing that I always try and do is I always want to learn more about everything. Yeah. So that I can help other people. So my typical day would be starting with Inner Warrior stuff. I see clients throughout the day. Obviously, learn as much as I can. I read a lot of books.
Pull that mic just a little bit closer to you. If you get a bit intimate with it. Yeah.
Read a lot of books, lectures, learn throughout the day when I get a chance. Yeah. See my clients, train personally.
What clients? What clients do you see?
Most of them would be Inner Warrior clients. So I see them for life coaching, type of counseling.
On a private basis?
Yeah. So I see them one-on-one. And obviously I do my workshops every now and then. And then
because I've seen the workshops. Mm. So I know that aspect of Inner Warrior is the workshop that you do. And I've seen posts and I've seen a bit about it. Mm. But now you're saying you do one-on-one sessions with people?
Yeah. So they would come see me for certain things. So like, for example, someone would come see me and saying, I'm going through this phase in a relationship. And then we chat about it and I help them out when I can.
Okay, so let me understand this. And now we're going to get stuck in Inner Warrior. But it's interesting. So it's not like, or maybe it is. It's not a predefined training like session, is it? Like to you, like say, like, you're going to see me every Wednesday at 10 o'clock.
It depends. So it would be like, let me describe it this way. Okay. What Inner Warrior is actually, it's... something that helps people to reach their full potential, whether that's in one-on-one sessions or if it's in workshops or if it's in group sessions, is irrelevant.
Who decides that?
The type of the format of the session.
No, who decides whether it's a one-off or a group session? How's that decided?
Usually it's by the client's needs. So they would come see me and say, for example, like one of my recent clients had problems with marriage and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So then we say, okay, come see me for a session. So that was I do a long session, 2-hour session for the first one.
Yeah.
We sit down, we analyze everything, look at what we're sitting with. And then after that, we decide, do you want to come again? What are we doing?
Or you say, you need to come again?
Yeah, sometimes they have to come again, but I always keep it in the ball in their court and tell them, if you want to come back, come back. Usually they do.
Yeah.
Some people come to me and say, I want to do a group session. So I have a group of people that work with me. We want to do a group session. So it depends.
So now, okay, and I always go back to that, we always try and live our passions, but to a large degree, our passions must pay the bills.
Yeah.
So how is there consistency in generating enough out of that inconsistency? Because it's almost you don't have any guarantee that you're going to see anybody again. And I obviously it goes down to what you're doing with the person to whether they get any results, they're going to come back. It's whether you are a fighting coach or not. If you're going to teach somebody to fight and they feel that they're growing and learning, they're going to keep coming back. Yeah. If they're not, or alternatively losing weight or whatever it is, it's got to be a result based. Mm. But when you're doing that situation, you generally got a lot more time with a person to get to the point of where they go, nay or yay.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily have that time with an individual. It's normally a one-off, do I feel there's a need for more? As and if I was coming to see you, is there a need for more? Do I feel like I'm healed? And I hate that word, but that's where people always come for fixes. Very seldom people come for longevity of things, and you probably find that.
Yeah.
But so how is the inconsistency then for you with that? Is it sustainable?
It is, but the way that I do it, you could say you don't have clients on a very long basis, if you want to put it that way, because I found the way I do things, you get results relatively fast. So it's not like I'll see someone.
You do get results fast?
Yeah.
That's rewarding.
Yeah, it is. And what happens is, for example, you'll see someone for one or two sessions and they're in a much better space, so then the work's done.
Is it done though?
No, it's not done, but they feel it's done. So they're in a better space.
Okay, so what do you do then? I mean, like, if you know that it's about, and most of the time it's about consistency in what you're doing. Mm. So if you are going through a process of bettering yourself, and that's really what Inner Warrior is recognizing and bettering, do you actually say, listen, I do need to see you again?
It depends on the situation. Sometimes I do. If I see it's a big problem, then I'll say, you know what, I really recommend you coming back so we can go deeper into it.
Yeah.
Some people do it purely for, like you said, they come for a fix. They're in a situation, they want relief. They get the relief, and then they feel like they're good, and then they don't come back again. That happens. My thing is, it's a lifelong thing. There's always something you can work on, and you can develop.
You always should be learning more about yourself.
Yes.
I mean, and that goes back down to even coaching, and that's another aspect of what you teach fighters.
Yes.
All right. So you're coaching fighters, and it's the same process. Whether you're a coach or whether you're a fighter, the moment you reach that place where you think you can't learn anymore, you're done. You're done. I mean, you shouldn't be involved anymore. For me, you shouldn't be involved anymore, because I think it's you're constantly learning and evolving.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing. So I want to go back now to you as a fighter. How long have you been fighting for? How long did you fight for? Because you don't fight at the moment anymore.
I still do. I fought last year, but it was not on a big scale. So I started fighting. My martial art journey started when I was little.
What's little?
So little, I would say, probably like grade 4. I started. That is, how old is that?
Well, grade 4 would be my standard 6. So it's probably like 13, 12, 13.
Yeah, around about there.
Was it about 12, 13?
Yeah. I think it's less than that. I think it's like 10 years old, because 13 you're on grade 7.
So. No, well, okay, when my days, 13 was standard 6, which was great. Okay, so yeah, and then they moved it a year back. So you probably like 10, 11.
Yeah, around there. So then I started with karate, and then I took a break and I did rugby for many years. And then around about 2007, I started with martial arts.
2007, okay.
Yeah, with seriously. So,
why? Why go? So now this is the interesting transition. Mm. So karate, which I think most kids started karate. And I think it's a lot of the parents putting them into the process of learning discipline and control. And especially with boys, they always want to make sure you can control your aggression and have respect. Mm. I think it's a great way to go. I think that's what martial arts is very good at. But why karate, rugby, martial arts?
So the thing with the karate at first, like you said, it was a choice that my parents made to say, go and learn these things, and, you know, just to prepare you for life in general. After that, got a bit bored of it. Like, for example, the traditional...
What belt did you get to?
Yes, I think green. I think that's like 2 years.
But isn't that green, like, straight after? It goes yellow?
Yeah, white. Then we did
white. It was white.
Yellow. Orange and green.
Okay, so it was a couple of... Okay. It wasn't that bad. Yeah, okay, it was a couple of belts down.
Yeah, with the traditional martial arts, it gets quite boring, especially for kids, because you do the same stuff over and over and over. And you do your
You do your katas.
Eventually I got...
What style of karate was it?
Shotokan.
Is that the Ichni Sanchi
one?
Yes, yeah. Okay, I know that.
So we did that, and I kind of got bored of it. So then I decided, let's go play rugby, because my dad was really interested in the rugby. So I said, okay, let's do it.
Okay, but now your dad is very much involved in martial arts with you.
Yeah, that's a development that came later.
Did that come with your development in the sport?
Yes. So
your dad was a rugby guy first?
Yes, he was a rugby guy. And actually, when I played rugby for the school, he helped out with coaching the teams and stuff.
Oh,
so
wow.
So he was part of that, because he was always a big part of everything that I do, which was, I'm very blessed yes. to have. So I did the rugby, and then my brother, who's a performer, he sings and all those kind of things.
Yes, we've seen him perform.
Yeah. So he there was a martial arts school close to my high school, and then he went there because he was like, he wants to do this. And I didn't do it yet. I was still playing rugby. And then the one night, I was like, I'm going to come with you. I'm going to check what this is about.
Yeah, I can see what your little brother's doing.
Yeah. And at the time, it was Valentino.
Was he coming home beating you up?
No, he didn't.
Okay.
So at the time, it was a Valetudo school. So it wasn't like mixed martial arts, yeah. you know. So I wanted to go check it out. So I did a free session. We did pad work. I still remember it very vividly. It was fun. And afterwards, I was like, I really, really like this.
So your first session, they did pads?
Yeah. They did more boxing pad work. Yeah,
that's amazing. Well, it's amazing for me because I never do pads.
Yeah,
well. It's called payday pads with me. So I only do pads after it gets close to the payday again. So you did pads and you loved it.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. So then I went back home and I said to my parents, listen, I think rugby is going to take a back seat now. I want to try this.
So was it that immediate?
Yeah, it was quite immediate. I immediately felt like I want to do this. It felt like something I want to achieve. Like I remember at the gym, there was this guy, a couple of guys who was experienced in fighting.
Yes.
And I looked at them and said, I really want to be like that. That's pretty hardcore. So yeah. Then I started doing that and they were heavily into Muay Thai. And
did you get hit in the first session?
No.
So you didn't know if you liked getting hit?
No, I didn't know that.
Because I mean, that's always an aspect. And it's one of the funny things I always say, I've seen great guys, you obviously as well now through the years with I've seen guys come in and they look fantastic, hitting the bag, hitting the pads, their movement, and then they get hit and they go, oh no.
Oh yeah, the gym warriors.
Yeah, yeah. And so how long did it take before you got hit?
I think it was not long, because we had sparring sessions at the gym. I think it was like a Tuesday and a Thursday, I think, can't remember. It was just sparring. So the coach would come in, put the time on, and that's it.
You just spar. Look at each other.
Yeah, so eventually I went to that class. I can't remember how long it was.
Yeah.
And I did get hit, and it wasn't that bad. Like, I got hit, and I was like, okay, I'm not made of glass. I'm still here.
Yeah.
And then I started getting a kick out of it.
See, that's an interesting thing, because often people come to me, and they say to me, like, do you like getting hit?
Mm.
And I don't think it's a case of being hit.
No.
It's that it doesn't really bother you.
No, it doesn't really bother you. Then nobody likes getting hit.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly it. No one likes to get hit. And I always say, it's not like I'm some kind of freak that I enjoy, like I get off getting hit. But it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
And I think that's the difference. And that's what makes people fighters or not. Is that it doesn't change the way they are.
Exactly. And what gives people a kick out of it, from my experience, is the fact that you realize you're tougher than what you thought you were. I mean, you take
some
a big
us.
Shot. Some of us.
Yeah.
You take a big shot and you're like, hey, okay, I'm still standing. And that's a kind of a, you could say, rewarding
for yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, okay.
All right. So you started sparring. You enjoyed it.
Then did a couple of training sessions. And then my brother, because he started before me, and they had a tournament at Warrior Sports, which is in Centurion. I remember this. And my brother was going to go. And our gym at the time wasn't highly competitive. So my brother was like, he was small. It was like 6 years difference between us.
Your brother's still small.
Yeah, well, he's taller than me now. But oh, he's still young.
But yeah, but he's not he's a dancer. And he's very athletic and he's bold in that. He's not a big guy.
No.
Yeah.
So he was going to go to this tournament, but he was the only guy from our gym going. And I said to him, you know what? I'll go with you. I want to try this out. But I was training for, I think it was like a month. Like I
didn't You want to go and try it out and fight?
Yeah.
You weren't just going back like to hold the towel?
No, I was going to go compete with him. I said to him, don't worry, I'll go with you. Wow. So I entered into a tournament there. It was a light contact kickboxing fight.
Okay.
And we didn't train kickboxing. We trained...
So light contact, for those who don't understand, what does that mean?
It means controlled contact. So you're not allowed to pull your punches back and try and knock the guy out. You're just scoring points.
So it's about touching.
Yeah, it's like sparring.
Yeah,
basically.
Okay. All right.
So I went there and I did the tournaments and I remember it very clearly. And there were a couple of guys in the division and I won my first one, won my second one, and I got into the final against this guy. And he kicked my ass out. It was bad. Like, I remember the one time, I think it was after the first round, I went to my dad and I was like, yo, I'm seeing double, man. This guy's hitting me so hard. I don't know what was going on.
So this was a light contact, yeah, and you were seeing double.
No, he hit me hard.
Okay.
So, but it was mostly hard because I wasn't conditioned for getting hit.
Okay. Do you get conditioned for being hit, though?
I think you react better. Like, usually beginners would freak out when they get hit. Where you keep our composure? You know,
because that's, I mean, that's something that also it comes up over and over again. And maybe you as a coach now, teaching fighters, how do you condition somebody for being hit? Do you condition? I mean, we all know that you can condition your body and you can do like medicine balls on your stomach and, you know, all that kind of stuff, the Rocky stuff we see. But can you condition somebody for being hit in the head?
You could say you're conditioning their reaction to getting hit. Like, if you
get used to it.
You get used to it, but you stay calm. Where someone who's not conditioned gets hit, they feel it, they start
panicking
out. Yeah. Where an advanced guy would get hit, it hurts, but you stay calm. So it doesn't mess up.
So you've never seen that videos that are, and every now and again they do their circuit on the social media where the guy's like punching the guy in the face.
I saw that.
So, like, your take on that? Because, like, my take is, that's ridiculous.
No, that's ridiculous.
Because you can't condition the brain from getting used to getting smashed up against the skull and causing concussion, which effectively is being knocked out. You can't condition yourself.
No, that's crazy. That's messing something
up. But I like what you said. You condition yourself and how you react to being it. So it's not that surprise that, oh my gosh, I got smacked.
Exactly. You just control your mindset around it. That's all.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Back to the story.
Yeah.
I'm introducing it. Just things that have, it's interesting that come up. So you do this fight. It's in the final. This guy's smashing you.
Yeah. And then I remember that day, it was kind of, it sucked. But I got silver, which was cool. So I was like, okay, this is like kind of nice. And that was my first exposure to a fight because I've never fought outside of martial arts up until this day.
Yeah.
So there it was like, okay, so that's what fighting's like. And I kind of enjoyed it. And then I went back to the gym and I said to him, I want to do this again. Yeah. And they said, okay, let's start training. So then we started training.
For fighting.
It wasn't just a thing to do. Now I want to take it serious. And I remember vividly, I made a post on social media a couple of weeks ago, like throwbacking on this whole thing.
Yes.
Where I went back at a tournament there and I did actually really well. And then I sat back and there I decided that I want to become a fighter. This is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And I had this goal. So there it kind of, you could say, if you want to use the terminology, you could say my warrior spirit awakened, if you want to use that word.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah, so that was what happened there.
And then how long has the process been that you were fighting for? Like, what was the style?
That was, well, what I competed in.
Kickboxing. Just kickboxing.
Yeah, it was kickboxing, but we trained MMA at the time. So we weren't like purists and striking.
And where, in what gym was this?
It was called Dragon's Lair.
I know that name. I don't know that name.
Yeah, it was a guy. His name was Jock Wagner. He was a really good coach. He taught me a lot. I think he does Crazy Monkey now. He always trained with Rodney King. So
okay, that's probably why I know the name.
Yeah.
All right. So then how long was that journey? How long did you fight for?
I fought. That started around about 2007.
This is all amateur stuff.
All amateur. 2007. Then we trained there. I think until 2009. And then we decided we want to do our own gym because we met a guy called Arnu Pinar who trained. We crossed paths because we trained the Defense Force and the Hawks in self-defense hand-to-hand combat. And we used him in that circle. Then eventually he decided he wants to make his own gym. And my dad at the time and myself moved with him and we started Shido. That's how that gym started.
Is that how Shido started? Yeah, so Shido started with this guy.
Arno.
Is it Arno?
Yeah, Arno.
Arno and... And your dad?
Yes.
And yourself?
Yes. And Arno's brother, Ian, was also involved. So we started like Shido. And
what is Shido?
Shido, the whole thing came from the self-defense concept. Like Arno taught us this thing where he called it, if you count in Japanese, you go Ichi San Shi.
Yeah.
So if you look at it's number four. So they said four and do is way. So if you like Taekwondo, Judo, and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So it's four way fighting systems. That's where the...
That's interesting. I was always wondering if Shido.
So a lot of people say, but in Japanese, Shido means penalty. Yeah, but that's if you take the word as a whole. It's actually supposed to be like Shi and then like a dash Do, if you want to be technical.
So does the word Shido actually mean penalty?
Yes, actually.
Like penalty, like as in soccer penalty?
Yeah, it's a penalty. So a lot of times,
oh, really?
Yeah, or punishment also it can be translated as. But that wasn't the original idea. The idea was four-way type
of thing.
So we went with that and... up until that point, about 2009, I fought a lot of Muay Thai fights, kickboxing fights. We did some grappling stuff as well. And I was training, like I dabbled in a lot of martial arts because I always believed, up until today, I believed take everything you can get from everywhere and then take what works and reject what doesn't work.
Yeah.
So I did judo, I did Brazilian jiu-jitsu, wrestling, Muay Thai, San Shao, I did a lot of things. And I think it was 2009 or 8, I think it was 2008, I had my first MMA fight, mixed martial arts.
So amateur?
Amateur.
And, with who?
That was still, it was in the phase where Dragon's Lair was still there, but we were in the process of moving over to Shida.
But who did the tournament?
Oh, it was also at Warriors. They had like they had this thing which at the time didn't really work. Was the light contact MMA thing?
Yeah,
like
light contact MMA.
Yeah, I don't know. We beat each other up.
It wasn't light contact. Sort of. It sounds weird.
Yeah,
so, like military intelligence.
Yeah.
So, light contact MMA. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. So we had that fight there. I believe it was 2008, and then. Also enjoyed it.
Mm.
I remember I finished my opponent in a light contact fight. Don't know.
You finished your opponent?
Yeah, I remember with a head kick. Because we didn't fight with shin pads on. We didn't have shin pads on. We didn't have headgears on. We just had MMA gloves.
But so, and again, that's just weird. That I mean, because if you look at the rules, that's full contact. That's professional.
They took it on the same rules as light contact kickboxing. Like you can't pull your punches back and that kind of stuff. But at the time when we started with MMA, regulation wasn't properly regulated at all.
It's not really regulated now either. So, it's still a bit of a dog show.
So at the time there wasn't a lot of rules in place.
So you just made up your own rules, really?
Pretty much. So I fought there. I was still young. I think I was 16.
No shin pads, no headgear.
No.
Just MMA gloves.
Just MMA
and the 4-ounce MMA gloves. Yeah. Jeez, like it.
So we that was like
under the guise of light contact. Fucking hell.
So that's when the sport started to evolve, really.
Yeah.
So I did a couple of those fights. Then we actually imported, because we started an event called Rise of the Warrior.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yes.
I remember Rise of the Warrior.
Yeah, so when we started to build our cage, we actually imported the fence with EFC, because you couldn't get the fence here. You could get that, I don't know, like that chicken...
Yeah, the chicken fence stuff.
That green, thin one.
Yeah.
But we couldn't get the plastic-coated one. So we imported with them, and then we took our fence, and they took their fence to build their cage.
Oh, really?
So that's when the cage actually properly started, Up until then, I mean, there was a fight.
Most of the guys were using rings those days.
Yes,
then.
And some of them used rings with the fence outside the ropes. And
I remember seeing that as well.
So that was the beginning stages of, like, mixed martial arts here, really.
Yeah.
And then it started becoming more... organized. But anyway, so then I started fighting a lot of fights. I had my first fight in the cage was at our event, Rise of the Warrior. And that was a memorable one for me.
Still amateur.
And that was when I got, because I've got two of the fastest knockouts at Rise of the Warrior, which is pretty cool.
Wow.
So the one was 3 seconds. Like I walked up to the guy, but I intimidated him beforehand, so I knew he wasn't going to last. So I walked up on him, and then I gave him my head. Like, I still have that video. I gave him my head. I dropped my hands. He jabbed it. I slipped the jab, and I stepped through with my own jab, and I caught him clean, and then he went down.
With a jab?
With the jab. And then I finished him there, which was cool. And then the other one I had at Rise of the Warrior, I think it was 5.
That's a little bit arrogant, hey?
Me?
But that sounds a little bit arrogant. You gave him. I mean, you must have been quite cocksure of yourself. I did.
Because at the time, I trained with guys like... because my team that I trained with was like Gareth Bursky, David Bursky, Gordon, those kind of guys. So I was young. I was very young.
Yeah.
And I always trained with guys who were very experienced and much older.
Yeah.
So that gave me a bit of confidence. Like I knew, like, yes, if those oaks can hit me.
Then you can...
That's how I thought at the time.
Yeah.
So even if you watch my old fights, I mean, I spoke to one of my students the other day and I was like, if you ever saw my old fights, don't do what I did. Okay. Because I guess I was arrogant. Wow. So... that was cool. And then I had another fight at, I can't remember what the event number was. I think it was 5 or 6, Rise of the Warrior.
Mm.
Fought a guy who was from a kickboxing background. And I think that was my first proper fight in the cage. And I remember hitting him with the jab. And then he came in with his own jab. And I threw a right hook. And I knocked him out. I think that was 8 seconds, that one. But to be really honest, it looks really cool. But at the time, my eyes weren't even open, to be really honest. I remember swinging, and I thought I missed him. And when I looked, I was like, oh, he's down. Cool. So
we got the video to show, to watch so you can enjoy it.
So that was my beginning stages.
Yeah.
And then my career kicked off. Because at that fight...
So did you ever go pro, though?
No. That's what I wanted to tell you now. So at that fight, EFC's guy was there. Graham was at one of our previous events. I can't believe if it was Cairo... Someone was at that event.
Was ESC already on the go?
They were starting, yes. They started when I was in the trick. Then they started. Okay. I was at the first show. It was a big thing.
At the Dome. I was there as well.
Yeah.
Cage side. The Enforcer.
The Enforcer.
Jeez. That was a long time ago, huh?
Yeah. Many, many years ago. Then he was actually there and they were scouting for fighters. And they saw me fighting and I knocked the guy and then they sent me a contract. And I believe...
So you got an EFC contract?
Yeah, I got the contract. And that was... I still have it, actually. Thing.
That's a nice thing to have.
That's a nice thing to have. So that was when I was still young. I was just out of school. So I was like 18, 19. Mm. And they gave me the contract, but then I didn't take it because I was in two minds if I want to coach or I want to fight. Because I that was where the...
So that was... This is the fork in the road.
Yeah, that was the fork in the road. So then...
Why couldn't you have fought and then coached?
At the time, how I saw it,
yeah.
First of all, I'm very, very hard on myself. Like, I need to, when I perform, I'm very critical about how I perform. So, at the time, I didn't think I was ready. Like, I still wanted to iron a couple of things out. Because, I mean, that was my second or third proper fight in the cage.
But if in reality, at that time, that's what was available.
Yeah.
Everybody was very young in the game.
Exactly.
There was probably a handful of guys that had fights that probably had fights with a couple of promotions that were running at the time.
Mm.
But most of the guys were young in the game. And EFC took a big chance in going out and trying to put together the show like they did with a limited talent pool. Because it was a limited talent pool. There was a handful of guys out there.
Yeah.
That had experience. Otherwise, most of the guys were like you say, babies in the game.
Yeah,
and they went out there on a limb, put on a big show with a lot of money thrown into it, with a very small talent pool.
Mm.
So at the time, it was a hell of a gamble. And big ups to them for taking that gamble. I mean, it's done a lot of good for a lot of fighters and done a lot of good for the industry. But so you got this and you decided that you weren't ready for that step yet.
Yeah, I didn't want to take that step yet. Mainly because if you sign that contract, you basically, you know, you belong to EFC basically for, let's say, 2 years or...
Was it a duration contract?
That or the amount of fights, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I remember that the early contracts were... It's either 2 years or four fights or something like that. Okay.
And then basically... They tell you where you must go do signings and, you know, if you have to fight.
Become a product.
Exactly. So at the time, I was split between coaching and fighting. So I didn't train as I used to stay in shape all the time.
But you're still young now. You're 18, 19?
Yeah.
And you're already coaching?
Yeah, I was already coaching and stuff. So then I said, you know what? I really like the coaching thing. Like I always felt part of my calling was to help people. And
to teach.
Yeah, to teach. I just felt that. So then I made the decision that I want to go a little bit more into coaching side. So I said, no, thanks. Not now. Which at the time, if I did take it, I think my career would have been totally different than what it is now. But I decided not to do it.
And regret?
Not really, no. I'm very happy with where I am.
Okay.
I mean, like I said, personally, if you ask me what I feel that I don't feel my calling is to just fight for the rest of my life.
Sure.
If you want to put it that way.
But don't you feel then there's a part of you that goes, then you could have done it for one or two?
Yeah.
You don't feel that there's possibly a bucket list tick that you're going to miss out on? Are you still in a unique situation that you're young enough to still go, I can still take a dip in the pool?
Yes. That's where I'm now, to be honest with you. Like, I'm really looking at, like, SFL the other day. I looked at it and I was like, I think I should get in there again. So yeah. I do have that.
Because now you're coaching full-time. Is it a full-time thing?
Yeah, it's coaching? Basically full-time, yeah.
You're in the gym most of the time in between the Inner Warrior. Mm. You're full-time. And then we're going to fast forward to the birth of SFL.
Because
SFL, for those that don't need it, it's Supreme Fight League. It's a kickboxing K1. Now, for those that don't understand this, and I often get this question, what is K1?
Mm.
What is K1? Because everyone knows kickboxing.
Yeah, everybody knows kickboxing.
What is the difference between K1 and kickboxing?
The thing is, K1 is, if you want to go back into the history of it, it started in Japan, basically, and they started this event called K1.
Mm.
And how it started, they took different striking disciplines, pretty much like mixed martial arts started, and they put them under a set of rules and they fought, and then it developed into a style. Like
okay, but so what's the difference really between K1 and kickboxing?
The rule of if you take normal kickboxing, if you say kickboxing, most people think of it like you call it American kickboxing, which is the long pants, the flashy pants, high kicks and boxing.
Yeah, okay.
That's what people think of.
High kicks. Yeah, high kicks mean you can't kick the legs.
Yeah, you only kick above the belt.
Above the belt. Yeah. Okay.
So that's what you would refer to as American kick, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
Then you get like what people call the Dutch style kickboxing, which is you can do low kicks, you can knee the guy, you can do what we call a spinning back fist, where you turn around.
So you can't do a spinning back fist in
High kicks.
Normal kickboxing.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. Okay. So there's already a difference.
Yes,
okay.
A difference. And obviously the knee strikes and the holding also. In high kicks, you can't hold and you can't use
the
knee.
So there's no clinch, there's no hold up.
No.
Okay.
So it's
you can't even catch kicks either.
No, you can't. Okay. And then K1, that's the other rule difference. So kickboxing is a umbrella term for many things, actually.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm understanding now, is that it's people say kickboxing, but there's a lot to it that maybe doesn't fall under that exact name.
Exactly.
It's because then what's the difference between that and Muay Thai?
No, Muay Thai, a couple of things. Elbow strikes, number one.
Okay, so Muay Thai, you can do elbow strikes. You're not allowed that at all.
Yes.
In kickboxing.
No elbows in kickboxing.
In K1?
In K1 also not.
Oh, so K1's no elbows either.
No elbows either.
So the only places you allowed elbows is Muay Thai and MMA.
Yeah, and there are other styles, like you get this style, I don't know if you ever saw it, called Letway. It's like Muay Thai, but like it's crazy, like no gloves.
What is it called?
Letway.
Letway.
L-E-T-H-W-E. Letway. Go watch it.
I've never heard of it.
It's mad.
Letway.
Yeah.
Letway, okay.
So that's another style. It's like Muay Thai, but just it's
L-E-T?
Hardcore. I think it's H-W-E-I, if I'm correct.
Letway. Letway.
Did I spell it correctly?
I don't know. I'm going to try and tell you right now. Letway. I don't even know if I've got this right. No, that's something else altogether. Okay, let's try that again. Maybe I'm doing it wrong. So L-E-T...
H, I think. W-E-I, if I'm correct.
W-E-I. Letway Fighting.
Okay, yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Let's have a look and see what this is. All right, so Muay Thai is allowed elbows?
Yeah.
Okay. And the catching of the catching and the grabbing and that, is that pure K1?
No, look, with Muay Thai, another big difference is the clinch time. In Muay Thai, you can clinch a lot. Clinching, basically holding on to your opponent. You can hold on for quite a long duration of time. In K1, they would give you...
Oh my God, you just headbutted that guy.
Exactly.
So like, this Letway, you can headbutt.
Yeah, it's like Muay Thai.
That was Mike Tyson trying to do his own headbutt. That's not even Letway, that's just... But... Letway, hang on a second. Let me just find it. So carry on. Tell us the
difference.
Yeah, while I try and find a video of this. That would look crazy, bro.
It's mad. So Muay Thai, you're allowed to clinch for longer. You can hold onto your opponent for longer. You can grab a kick, hold the kick, and strike. When K1, you can hold for like 5 seconds or one strike and let go. You see, that's a big difference. So in Muay Thai, you can grab, you can knee until, you know.
That's in Muay Thai.
That's in Muay Thai. In K1, grab, one knee, let go.
But that's what makes it so exciting, though. Because I think that's what generally what the feedback from the people is, it's just constant action.
That's what I found, because I did Muay Thai for a long time. I got my instructor's license in Muay Thai and all those things.
Did you go fight in Thailand?
No, okay. I did not. So I just had
a... Is that a bucket list?
No.
You're not interested to go?
No. So with Muay Thai, I found a big difference because I transitioned to kickboxing. And what I found was hectic is the pace difference is crazy. Muay Thai is much slower for me. It's much slower. So you'll see the guys move slower, more flat-footed, more clinch heavy.
These guys are fucking kicking each other's ass.
Yeah, I know.
This is some serious shit.
It's crazy.
It's like they're just wearing wraps.
Yeah,
they're
just wearing wraps. I told you, it's like bar fight Muay Thai.
Holy shit. Where do they do this?
I can't remember the country.
This is Letway World Championships. Just, you really got to not like yourself, eh? To do this.
That's this is savage.
This is not done anywhere locally, eh?
No, I don't know.
I've never heard of this before. No. You're telling me something. And I mean, there's elbows. God, this is quite hectic.
No, it's hectic.
Wow. Okay, Letway. If you don't know what Letway is, go do yourself a favor, guys. Just go and Google this. L-E-T. What did I spell it now? L-E-T something. What the hell?
L-E-T-H.
L-E-T-H-W-E-I. Letway. Bernese bare knuckle boxing. Bernese, what it's about. Yeah, crazy. Anyway, crazy. So coaching, SFL comes along, and I take it, it's your father's idea to get involved in it. Was it his push to do SFL? To create a professional league of it?
Yeah, what happened is we did the Rise of the Warrior thing with mixed martial arts.
Yes.
And from that, we had a branch called... So the Rise of the Warrior was the more, you could say, the bigger production.
Yes.
Then we had another one, which was a local one we would put in the gym and stuff, like for lower level fighters. Hmm. And what was it called? Was it Way of the Warrior or something?
Sounds familiar, but it could be something different.
It was a smaller event.
Okay.
So then after the stuff with MMA, we decided we're not going to do it anymore. So the event stopped. And around about 2014, when I got involved with kickboxing, I had a sit down with my dad because that's my dad. And it's a family thing. Like my dad and my mom also worked with the Rise of the Warrior thing. So I sat down with them and I said, you know what? Kickboxing is, there's no proper big event.
Kickboxing has always been, it's always been your church, your high school hall. That's kickboxing, and it's always been that sort of base, and it's always been like your poor man's sport. And I say that with respect, but that's always the way it's come across. It's always been the guys that are come out of a rougher area or a poorer sort of setup, and boxing also has that, but boxing's got the professional arm of it, which allows you to sort of get to the bigger stage and lights. But kickboxing notoriously has always had that stigma of high school hall.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we wanted to capitalize on. So we knew that there were good kickboxers. There's guys with some crazy skill.
And those kickboxers were getting lost to MMA.
Yeah.
Because I remember a lot of kickboxers were going, and the top of my head, there's a whole lot of guys from the West End that I think it's Petey Coxon. Petey Coxon was Petey Coxon a kickboxer?
I'm not sure if he was a boxer or a kickboxer. But like Jimmy.
There's Van Winkle. Those are kickboxers. Those are machines in the kickboxing game. Transition to MMA and struggled. And have really actually been dominated in the MMA game.
Because of the grappling. I mean, they don't know anything about it.
And that's exactly it. So these guys were machines in the kickboxing, were respected and feared. Mm. Come across to MMA because there's no other professional platform they can go to except that and get smashed in MMA and lose all that credibility and all that sort of following they had because of it. So now you got SFL, back to your story, you saw that there was a market for professional kickboxing.
So basically it was a chat of, let's get this going again. So we did it at the time with mixed martial arts. We stopped it, and now we said let's start it again. There's an opportunity here.
There's opportunity.
So we did a bit of a trial thing. I believe it was in 2014.
That was at the military base.
Yeah,
in Pretoria.
We just did a test. Like we didn't put a lot of money behind it. It was very.
I remember I ring announced that. Yeah, that's when Paul Rothman fought.
Yes,
as the main fight.
Yes.
Yeah, I remember.
And that was a very just a quick event we just put together to see is there really a market for this.
Yeah.
When we did it. Was a success. People enjoyed it. And then we took a bit of a break up until 2017, I believe. Then we said, okay, it was a long break.
Yeah.
And then let's do this properly.
Because at the time, anybody in martial arts knows that the biggest kickboxing K1 league outside or out there is Glory.
Mm.
Glory, and for anyone who doesn't know, again, go and Google Glory and go watch it. I mean, Glory is massive. We've actually had some South African guys go over there. Well, not even South African guys, but local-based fighters fighting Glory.
Yeah.
Zach Makweza won a title there. And that's sort of like the pinnacle of K1 around the world.
Yeah.
I'd imagine there's probably K1 in Japan somewhere. There's a tournament that's probably highly rated. But in terms of a promotion, Glory is the way you want to be. Yeah. Like for MMA, UFC is where you want to be. If you're a K1 fighter, Glory is where you want
to be.
So you guys you went and you spoke to the guys at Glory, you got a deal together where you became the official scouting partner.
Exactly.
Is that still in effect?
Yeah, we're still talking to them. So what the idea was is they need more fighters, obviously, just like any other
promotion. Yes, like any other, yeah.
And we have guys here, but what we said to them at the time is, look, kickboxing here hasn't been as fully developed as it is over there.
Yeah.
So we don't have that professional league where the guys are on a high level where you can say, take this guy and let him go fight there.
Yeah.
So we said to them, okay, let us build it up. And as we build it up, you guys can look and you can see if there's anybody that you guys are interested in.
Yeah.
So we're building the platform.
Well, and it has built.
It has built a lot.
Because, I mean, the first SFL, I think there were like two pro fights on the card.
Yes.
Two or three pro fights. Mm. And the last one we just had now, there were how many pro fights?
That was supposed to be 9. So, yeah, with the one that was cancelled.
Yeah, and that included the elimination.
Yes.
So 9 fights from literally, I think it was 1 or 2 fights in the first one. We've got to a case of 9 fights on the last one. So there definitely is growth.
Mm.
And you can see it in the standard of the fighting. Yeah. So what's next for SFL?
Next is the 28th of September is next.
Oh, is the 28th? I was actually going to ask you that.
Yeah.
28th of September is SFL 7.
Exactly. And
wow, yeah, that's down the road.
No, we traveled.
August, September, it's two months. Just over 2 months.
It's quick. So we're going to do that one and there's another one in November. So that's the
So there's still two more for this year.
Still two more.
So if you're a kickboxer out there, Muay Thai fighter, and I know there's a little bit of what you have to do in order to qualify to fight as a professional. There's a process and there's certain things that have to go through. But if you're interested, there must anybody out there, and I think anybody where we're talking South Africa, Africa, anywhere on the continent, if you're interested, hit you guys up on your Facebook page. It's probably the easiest thing.
Yeah, they can just contact us.
And it's the Facebook page is SFL.
Yeah, it's Supreme Fight League.
So is that how you have to? Can you type SFL?
Yeah, I believe you can.
Will it come up? I'll just do this test. I like to do these tests. Let's see. Let's get Facebook up. So SFL. Look, as soon as it comes up. Okay, let's try this. Try a search. SFL. Hit the search button. See who we find. Because it would be the internet slow. There we go. It comes up. So it comes up right at the top of the page. Supreme Fight League. They should hit you up there and drop a message to you saying they're interested in fighting. They either already are a professional or they want to go pro. What is the requirement? And there's a requirement for them.
Exactly.
Now, one of the biggest gripes that came out of the last SFL was obviously something you guys don't control.
Mm.
And that is the reffing, the judging.
Mm.
That's run by a separate division.
Yes.
That's run by the guys that sit in SACA.
Yeah, SACA.
South African Kickboxing Association. And they are then governed by SASCOC, which is the Olympic Committee.
Yeah, they fall under MARSA.
Which is similar to the problems that MMA had right in the beginning. Because initially, I remember that MMA fell under a lot of the kickboxing stuff and were governed a lot by them. And they was trying to break away and trying to create their own identity. And I know there was a lot of issues with that. You finding a similar type of thing right now where you finding the, and again, it goes back to how kickboxing is run in this country. It's very amateurish. Mm-hmm. It's very Olympic based. And we gain out to a stage of professionalism. There was complaints just about the judging, the refereeing and all that. From my point of view, I think it's definitely improved.
Mm.
I remember right from the Pretoria one at the military base 5 years ago, whatever it was, to where we are now. And I think every event we always sit down, we always sort of do a recap as to like what's happened and how it was. Obviously, again, at commentary, I did the commentary at the last one. I got it completely wrong on a couple of occasions, deciding the winner based upon my view of it.
Yeah.
And it became the castle curse after a while. Where no matter who I said won, it would always go to the other guy. But that's sort of the gripe that came out of a lot of some of the gyms competing and also some of the public saying, like, we don't understand that. Is it a case of that we haven't grown fast enough in the judging with this professional league that you guys have created? Or is it a case of the public doesn't understand what they're supposed to be looking at?
I think it's both. Because if you look at SACA initially, when we started with, just before we started with SFL basically, they were SAAKA, which is South African Amateur Kickboxing Association.
Uh-huh.
And when...
So it was SACA.
Yeah, exactly. So then when we started because the Pro League was running, but it was mixed events. So you would have an event that's got mixed martial arts, kickboxing, Muay Thai, boxing, all of it on one event, you know?
Yeah, difficult.
There wasn't a pure kickboxing league.
Yes.
And when we started that, we said, okay, but we're going to take this to a professional level. Then they changed. And they said, okay, we're going to take, because they fall under WACO, which is the World Association of Kickboxing Organizations, a long one.
WACO, yeah. SACA.
So there's a WACO amateur and a WACO pro.
Sure.
So they didn't use WACO pro that much up to this point.
So they're also growing.
They're also growing. And we're helping them and they're helping us. So it's
a, process, again, exactly like what we had with MMA. Is that we ask the public, we ask the gyms involved to be patient on the process.
Exactly.
To be patient as the sport grows, everything has got to grow with it. It's not a case of you can click your fingers and go, we're fully professional and everyone's going to be at the same level, because it's not something we can do. It's not going to happen. And that goes for everything. I mean, I think it's been a complete growth thing from the production to where we started.
Mm-hmm.
To where we now, the last event was beautiful in the production side of things. The fighting was a level up. And the judging, believe it or not, and the refereeing, particularly the refereeing, was a level up for me.
No, it was better.
A lot better. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just the process of getting to that point. In all this happening, you looked at it and you were like, maybe I can get out there and get dirty. Is that a possibility?
Yeah, for sure. The thing is that I must do first is, because the last time I fought was, I think it was last year, fought at the national championships.
Yeah.
And then won. So that was still showed me, okay, still have it. So yeah. It's good. So yeah, definitely. The last time I fought in the ring was in 2015, 16.
So how do we go from the matchmaker and coach to fighter, because you can't do all three in one night.
Can't do all three. That's what's holding me back.
So is it a case of you need to get somebody involved with you to take over that aspect of it before we can get to see you in the ring?
Yeah, pretty much. Because it's just not just matchmaker. It's on the night I'm running everything backstage, making sure everything's going.
There's a hell of a lot that goes on.
Yeah, and that is what I manage. So if I'm fighting, someone has to do that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, nothing's going to happen.
So the call goes out.
Yeah, who wants to?
I think the call first goes out to Dad.
Yeah.
Because Dad has to say, I'm happy to let you go and fight, because effectively you do this together.
Yeah.
It's a partnership that you run together. Now, if you're going to pull out of that side of it, you now have to. He has to be right with it.
Look, he's been asking me, actually. He's like, well, you must fight again. You must fight again.
Oh, really?
So he wants that. But obviously, like you said, this whole thing wouldn't happen without all the stuff that he's contributing. He's brilliant in what he's doing. And he was actually, for the people that don't know, he was the guy who pretty much brought regulation to MMA. I mean, he was what's called
correct.
Promo.
Yeah.
So he was involved with all of that. So. But he wants me to fight. He asked me, there was a couple of sponsors, because back in the day when I fought, a lot of sponsors sponsored me. They were like, okay, we'll sponsor your event, but you must fight.
Oh, there you go.
Okay, well.
So are we going to see SFL 8? Because now the next one's 7, and I'm not going to give you 7. I'm going to go, are we going to see you 8, 9, or 10?
I don't know. We'll see. Or keep it a surprise. We'll
do
a surprise release. Like, hey guys, guess what?
Okay. we'll have to wait for that to happen. So now, in the process of you coaching, running, getting this SFL, where did Inner Warrior come into that play?
That's an interesting story. Is I have been, even as a child, I've always been curious and I've always wanted to figure things out. Even with martial arts. I mean, one of my first instructors told me, for example, because in the beginning days of mixed martial arts, people didn't even really throw high kicks because you can get taken down. That was the thinking.
Yes.
And for
example, you leave yourself exposed.
Yeah, you leave yourself exposed. And like a spinning back fist or a spinning kick, that's like a big no, because you give your back, so you shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And me being me, you would say that and I'll be like, I'll try it first, then I'll believe you.
Yeah.
So I would go and experiment with it, and then I actually land it. I'm like, okay, so it works for me, you know?
Yeah.
I've always been like that. And then as I went through life, you know, life happens. Life hits us with some big shots.
Yes.
And then we start asking questions. We want to know what's going on. What is the bigger scheme of things? And I started digging and finding.
Where did that happen in your life? What age was this?
Luckily, young. I mean, my
young, search. Young again, you say this
17,
word young. 17.
That's young. Come on. I'm still, I'm still pretty young.
It's young. It's young at 17. It's young at still asking some big questions. Mm. So, yeah.
Okay. So, it all started, it's quite interesting. It all started with my current belief about everything. I started, because I'm the type of person when I'm into something, I'm in. I'm 100% obsessed with it.
Yes.
So I started researching, reading, trying to find answers, spoke to people, got information. And that showed me that what I believed at the time was not necessarily what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I started finding more angles. And once I got a good foundation down of what I know, I felt like there's many people that have the same situation. People that want to know, people that have questions,
yes.
And people that suffer. And then I wanted to feel, like I said, I always felt this desire to give, to help, you could say guide other people.
Yeah.
Then I started equipping myself to help others. And with martial arts, and I said this on my last podcast with you, I think, people don't understand, and you would relate, you're not just the coach. You're coach, you're psychologist, you're counselor, you're everything.
Yeah.
So when that happened, people come to me and say, listen, I have this issue in my life, which has got nothing to do with martial arts. But you must be there for them.
Yes.
And the frequency of this happening saw that there's a lot of people out there that needs guidance.
That are conflicted.
They need answers.
I think this world is pretty conflicted.
Exactly. And that gave me that thing where I felt, you know what, I think I'm going to go into this. And when I went into that, I felt passionate.
So what is it you went into?
You could say giving a holistic thing where I help people live better lives.
And when did that start?
That officially started this year. But before I did it,
you've been doing it all the time, though.
Yeah, I've been doing it all the time. It's just that last year was a big eye-opener for me in terms of a lot of people came into my life that were struggling with things. And it was all similar stuff. And then I sat and said, you know what? If I'm going to do this unofficially, you might as well do it officially.
Sure.
And that's when I sat back and said, you know what? I think I'm going to do this. And since I've done it, it's the best thing I've ever done. I think it's the biggest decision ever.
Okay. So you officially start up this year as a, in a capacity as a brand, Inner Warrior, Mone Lotta, that's what it is. But unofficially, you've been doing this for free.
Since I've been coaching.
For free.
Yeah, for free.
Helping people just as a mentor, as a guide.
Mm.
Okay. So who would use Inner Warrior? Who would come to you?
Well, anybody that wants to reach their full potential. Anybody that feels like I can do more or I'm not sure where I can, that's what it's for. And you know what, just to go back to the previous point, where it really blew off is I looked at martial arts as a whole. And if you look at the ancient masters, if you want to use that word, they taught a whole different approach to what we have today. And I read a lot of their teachings. Like if you look at Bruce Lee, let's take him, most people know Bruce Lee.
Yes.
If you look at his book, The Tao of Jeet Kune Do, if you read it, it's not just training physically. There's a lot of
mental
other stuff in there that's interesting about life, about a lot of stuff. And that was the original thing of martial arts. It was a vehicle for human development and to change you. We lost that and it became a pure physical sport.
Sure.
So I started throughout the last couple of years, I started bringing those teachings back in my gym. Started teaching them proper breathing, all these kind of things, controlling your thoughts.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I found in an hour's class or 2 hours class or whatever, there's not enough time to cover everything. So it's just too much. So now you either teach them, and many instructors do this, they realize that there's more to martial arts and they start talking more than they train. You know? And people are like, I'm here to get fit, you know? So then I decided, you know, let's split this thing. Let me create Inner Warrior, which is the more non-physical side.
The emotional, mental side of it.
Yeah. And you've got the physical side, which will be the martial art training. So I do integrate them at my gym, but I splitted them. Because, I mean, to teach someone to breathe properly in an hour class and give them a workout is very difficult. So that's where it actually started. I said, there's a big demand, and my students loved it at the time. They just wanted to know more and more and more. And I said, okay, but we can't do both.
Yeah, you can't do both.
Yeah. So
how does somebody get involved? You know, the biggest problem, and I think the biggest issue, is that people don't recognize sometimes that they need the help. Mm. And then they feel also, by acknowledging it, they're weakening who they are.
Exactly, yeah.
So what is the process now for anybody out there wanting to be more? How do they, obviously they can get hold of you. How do they get hold of you?
Well, you could get hold of me. I've got my website. I've got Facebook. I've got my numbers on all my things.
And your and the web, and your Facebook is Inner Warrior.
You can go to Inner Warrior.
And it's INNER and then Warrior.
Warrior, yeah.
Two words. Okay.
So you can contact me over there. The best thing that I would recommend is attend a workshop. That's the best thing. Because it's not
What is
personal.
A workshop?
So the workshop, for example, I'm doing one now at the end of this month, which I call, it's named a self-discovery workshop, but it doesn't really explain what it is. I mean, if
it's self-discovery workshop.
And what it is, in a nutshell, is, just to go back to something else, is with martial arts, I realized there's a lot more to everything than we think. I mean, maybe you've seen this before. You get people who come into a room and you just know this person. There's something different about them. They've got a strong presence. Everybody just turns their heads and like this guy. Then you get people who you've never met them. Brilliant, awesome person. You've got no reason to dislike them, but something about them just tells you
just bad news.
Yeah. And I felt that with fighting. Like you could tell which opponents are for real and which aren't. And And the explanation I got at the time from a psychological perspective was, no, it's body language, et cetera, et cetera. But I remember one time, there was a guy really scrawny, and he had this hunched over posture. He looked like the easiest guy to fight. Because when you fight in these round robin kind of formats, it's more than one guy.
Yes.
And there was something about this guy, and I knew, this guy, we have to be careful of, something about him.
Yeah.
And he ended up winning the whole thing. So that raised the question, what do you feel? What is that? You know, or when you do your face-off. When you do your face-off, some people have a strong presence and you feel something about them. It's like it's pushing against you. You're like, whoa, what is this?
Yes.
That led me to, there must be more than what we see here. Which also led me to the Inner Warrior thing. Because that's what the workshop essentially is. I teach people the truth about what's really going on. Or not the truth, let's not use that word. But what's really going on. All the different aspects and stuff. And once we do that, we take a look at the individual itself. What formed you throughout your life? What experiences shaped you to become who you really are? Because many people would say, I am what I am.
Yeah.
Okay, but why? Why are you... Like, for example, you don't like being vulnerable. Why don't you like being vulnerable? Let's take a look at it. Well, now, that sounds really personal. People are like, I don't want to come to this workshop. He's going to ask me, put me on the spot. But that's not the case.
But I think in order to grow, you need to be transparent in terms of where you are so that you can grow.
Yes.
Now, obviously, to do a workshop, you don't have to have any martial arts background.
No, it's got nothing to do with martial arts.
Okay, because I think that's the first thing people could possibly think, well, I don't do martial arts or I'm out of shape.
Yeah.
You're not going to do any exercise.
Not at all.
This is a time spent with you in a mental capacity and emotional capacity.
Yeah, and well, there is some stuff, like for example, the self-discovery workshop's 2 days, and it's 2 long days. I mean,
we start 2 days.
So we start at 9 in the morning, and we finish around about 4 to 5 in the afternoon. It's a long day. But for those people that are interested, go to my Facebook page, and there are reviews that people wrote about this experience, and you'll see for yourself what it's like.
When do you do them, over a weekend?
Yeah, it's a Saturday and a Sunday.
So you don't need to take leave, you can pretty much, it's a weekend.
Yeah, it's a weekend. And it's with the physical exercises we do, I won't say it's like push-ups and stuff.
Yeah.
I teach you various methods of breathing to, like, for example, some breathing techniques give you more energy and focus. Other ones give you relaxation. So I show that on the second day, which is the practical day. Teach you that. Teach you how to analyze your emotions and see what they're trying to tell you. All those kind of things. It's really interesting.
So at the end of this workshop, I come to this workshop. I do 2 days. What's it going to be the difference in me?
Well, first of all, it's probably going to change how you see everything, how you see other people, how you see your life, because that's the first stage. The first stage is I like explain why certain things happen. I mean, the common thing, which is now I'm actually jumping off topic, but the most common thing I always find people asking in every workshop and even on my social media, they always ask about relationships, always. Like, the most common question is, I met someone, it's different than anybody else before, and there's many other weird things going on. That's the biggest one I find. Sure. And to give people an explanation on that, they sit and they say, wow, okay, I never thought about it like that. Or why does certain events repeat in your life?
So, after the 2-day workshop, you're going to be enlightened.
You could
by whichever way that you possibly would need to be enlightened.
You could say
whichever area you need to be woken up on, or what's the word, or made aware of, you're going to definitely have this with this workshop. And this workshop is called?
It's the Inner Warrior Self-Discovery.
Self-Discovery workshop. Yeah. It's at what, in July, end of July?
Yeah, 27, 28 July.
It's held, where is it held?
It's in Centurion, where I do, it's at offices.
In Centurion itself. Yeah. All right.
So, but yeah, to your point, it's going to give you, you could say, enlightenment, if you want to use that, to many things.
Sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Something I'd like to actually attend or, and just, yeah, experience it. I'd like to experience it. So if anybody's interested, they should hit you up on Facebook.
Yeah.
Inner Warrior, drop you a message within from the page. Other failing that, they could probably just Google your name and get your cell phone number. It'll probably pop up.
Yeah.
It's like me as well. I'm also all everywhere, but... but get hold of you,
yeah.
and find out about the workshop. And I don't know how many slots you have available. I don't know how big does it get.
I keep the self-discovery workshop small, so usually I keep it at a cap of 10 people because I would like to give each person a good experience individually.
100%.
So I don't want to make it too big. That's the feedback I've got.
Is that it works better?
Yeah, feel like the one guy was a really cool review. He was an awesome guy. I liked working with him. He said that somehow I get it right in this workshop to make every person feel that they got their answers they came with.
Beautiful.
Which is cool.
That's a lovely review.
So I try to keep it like that. Otherwise, I...
All right. Is there enough space that we could offer one person
a
slot at this workshop? Because obviously we don't want to take away too much from you. But I think if anybody out there who is interested and has those dates available, because obviously those are the dates for this workshop, end of July, 27, 28. 28 July, 9 till 4,
Saturday. That's 5 the latest. Yeah.
Saturday and Sunday. If anybody's interested out there on the platform on Castles Council, drop me a message. Don't do it directly to Morne, because he's going to then put you as part of the workshop. Drop me a message on Castles Council. Either on the Facebook page or on my WhatsApp, or anywhere you like it, hold of me. Say you're interested in sitting on this workshop with Morne, and we'll hook you up and get you involved. And then you can hopefully come back and they can tell us a little bit about their workshop with you, because I think that'll be lovely as well to get that feedback.
No,
I'm sure you'd love that as well.
Of course.
Morne, it has been an interesting conversation. I'm looking at how long we've actually been going for over an hour. So it's it's been an hour of very, and I think we could possibly talk more, but I don't want to make people out there get angry with me and say, oh, Stephen could have split that up into two different groups, you know, it was long and I had to listen and, you know, it made me late.
Yeah.
But so I'm making it late. You can pause this podcast and come back to it. But in that, Morne, it's been a pleasure again to touch base with you, learn a little bit about the man behind Inner Warrior, because everybody spoke about the first podcast, they loved it. I think we learned a little bit more about yourself. We've got almost an assurance that we're going to see you in the ring.
Yeah,
we're going to push you on that one. Whether we see you, hopefully we see you before SFL 10.
Yeah, let's try. Maybe 10. 10 is a good round.
10's
number.
A nice number. But maybe we can get you before that, and then by 10 you can fight for a title.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
That'll be nice. Eh? But yeah, thank you very much for coming into Castles Council again. It's always a pleasure. It's always enlightening to listen to and talk to you. And I learned a little bit more about martial arts. I learned about what's this freaking lead weight. Jesus, crazy shit. That was great. I'm actually going to go watch a little bit more about that. And it's been beautiful. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
And we hope to see you and hear from you again. I'm sure we'll get you back in again down the line.
Yeah, thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you very much. Love you. Thank you. I normally always finish off, and I probably just stuffed up the video a little bit, but I normally finish off by saying, it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice. I'm Stephen Castle, and I don't give a fuck. I'm out of here. Thanks, guys, for listening.